Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. I usually do it from an office in San Francisco where I'm really comfortable. I got my two monitors set up. The whole thing's great. The problem is, freaking Australians. They're on a whole other time zone. And so whenever I want to interview an Australian, it's a pain in the butt for me or for them. And I don't want that. So I said, you know, I'm going to run a marathon on every continent in 1 year. And I'm going to go and make sure that I do interviews as I travel, and I want to get to know people in Australia, because the thing that I noticed about them, and Dylan, maybe you can tell me if this is just the way they react to me or in general, Australians are very comfortable talking about money without this sense of guilt, right? Like success without guilt.
Yeah, but I mean, is there success with guilt in the US?
Yes. You do not want to talk too much about it because there's this guilt, like, why me and not you? Or you're going to feel like you're rubbing it in people's... It's like this awkwardness. People are still comfortable talking about money, much more so than the rest of the world, but there is this sense of guilt. And Australians are like, no, this is like my life. You ask me if I tied my shoelaces, I'm not going to feel guilty that I did it. I'm smart enough to know it. You ask me about whether I built my company myself, I'm not going to feel guilty. Is that a good read?
I think so. Well, I don't know about actually money... I think about building companies, for sure. People are definitely, if they've built something that they're proud of, I think there's no inhibition to saying, like, I'm really proud of this thing
that I've
built.
Are you really proud of your business?
I am proud of the business, and I'm proud of the company, the team that we've assembled, especially, and the product we've built.
But there's a little hesitation. I didn't even introduce you, but I want to ask about the hesitation. What is it?
No, I think we've got so much to do.
Is it because you're an artist and you just see the things that aren't exactly the way you see them in your mind or how you want them to be?
I think it's more a case of, I feel like we're running a marathon and we're in the first 50 meters of it.
Okay. So it just doesn't feel like it's close enough to where you want it to be.
Yeah, and I will say that, you know, knowing myself, I can almost be certain there is no distance at which I'm like, oh, we're close to the end of the race. I know about myself, I will permanently be in a state of like, we're in the first 50 meters.
I know that too. And a lot of people say that what we're expressing here is unhealthy. I'm gonna come back to that in a moment. Let me introduce the guest who you just heard. His name is Dylan Baskin. He is the founder of Quiller. What Quiller allows people to do is create beautiful, you might say, oh, but it could be so much better. I'm gonna say beautiful proposals, sales, marketing documentation, all that stuff as web pages. So you're not giving people a link to a PDF that looks beautiful. It's a web page. It scrolls and interacts the way that a nice web page should. And by the way, you get to see when people have read all the way through or pretended that they did, but they never even opened it up, right? We're going to find out how well this business is doing and find out a little bit about Australian culture, all thanks to two phenomenal sponsors. The first will host your website, right? It's called HostGator. And the second, if you're looking to hire a developer or designer, you can go to TopTal, and I'll tell everyone about them in a moment. There is this sense that I never feel like my business is as far along as I want it to be, and I never feel it. You seem that way too. Do you think that's healthy?
I actually think it's, yes, I think that all, I think it's how you improve. I think if you have this level of like satisfaction about what you've created, it's sort of the end of the line of iterations, the end of the line of advancement. I think like any great entrepreneur, any great artist, any great musician, they're always pushing forward.
So what are you looking at today? And to me, it looks beautiful, but to you, it's like, I want to push it a little further. It's not
the,
there.
The thing for us is like, you know, we're building this new breed of...
Give me something you personally, as an artist, as a creator. What is it that you look at your product and you say, it's good?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not my level. Okay, I interrupted
okay,
you.
So,
before
so well, as, okay. It's like, so... necessary preface. We're building this new generation of document tool, right? And this is all about capturing the language and the vocabulary of the web and making it accessible to everyone, right? Not just developers and designers. When I look at the product today, I'm like, it does make these really beautiful pages, and people are already like so enamored with this idea. They can, you know, they can go on. They know nothing about design or technology. They can produce this beautiful interactive website that plugs into all their stuff. But there's so much more that the web can do. Mm-hmm. Like there's so much more design possibility in there, interactive possibilities that we're working on.
For example?
I mean, like right now with layouts. So for us, because one of the really important things to us was, has to be agnostic to devices. Mm-hmm. You can't be in this world with PDFs where it's like, well, I'm opening on my phone, therefore I can't look at it.
Yeah, two column PDFs are are horrible.
Like you just can't.
They look
can't
good
use
on
them.
A computer screen, but they're terrible on my phone.
But it's even like, you know, a report that's got too many words per line is like unreadable. I'll have to wait to some other time. Like that's stupid. It's the 21st century. The web is incredible. Like that shouldn't be the experience. But that was actually a really interesting design constraint because at least initially, where it was like, okay, well, how are we going to deal with? And again, like we want to make it so low bar for people, they're not having to think about responsiveness. Like, what does that mean? Like, we don't need people to think about that. So that means we have to do this kind of single column type mentality. And a lot of the things we want to do is to bring in, you know, how do we deal with multi-column layout and different types of layouts and arranging content in more interesting ways, but so that it's zero mental effort to make that work across, you know, work on a mobile context, work on your desktop.
You want even more design elements, but you need them to work seamlessly on all these other platforms.
Yeah, and I think the way I always like to think about this is like, what we're trying to do at Quiller in a very fundamental sense is like, take the matrix code of the web and turn it into Lego. So the constraint is, as we're adding more powerful design layouts and interactions and integrations, it always needs to feel like in Lego. It needs to be so unintimidating and fun and easy.
That I just had a block that I need and
just
remove the
block. Plug it in, it's not a problem. It's like, as opposed to like Photoshop or whatever, like you get in there and you're like, like too hard, I'm out.
Revenue, where are you guys?
Look, we're at a multi-million dollar run rate.
So I did the math, okay?
Okay.
In preparation, you guys, you have 40,000 clients according to an article that I read on smartcompany.co.uk. Is that right?
I think that would be an old figure about users.
So, oh, got it. So they're not all paid?
That would be an old figure about users.
Not necessarily paid, you're saying?
Not necessarily paid.
I thought you didn't have a free plan. You have a free plan?
We used to have a free plan. But we used to have a free plan.
But you also have something that I can find that's free?
Well, we've got a 14-day free trial.
Got it. Okay. All right. My math was going to show that you guys were... Well, I was going to say over $1 million a month. Is that crazy?
I'm going to say that we're at a multi-million dollar run rate.
Okay. How much funding do you have?
We have not taken a heap of capital to date. Single-digit millions.
Okay. From anyone I know?
Point Nine has probably been the biggest, sort of like most notable investor. They were the backers of, you know, Algolia and Zendesk and Typeform, a whole bunch of great companies.
I don't know that much about you, because there isn't that much about you online. I do know from reading articles about you that you used to be at Google.
No, that's my business partner.
So only Mark, I thought the two of you were there.
No, I've never worked for any, basically only ever worked for myself, essentially.
As a designer and that's
an engineer.
It. I do know from talking to you before we got started that you are a musician.
That's right.
What kind of music?
Somewhere between The National and The Arcade Fire.
What type is that?
It's like, dark folk rock.
Wow, I didn't even know that was a thing. Though actually, you know what? I went out for music in San Francisco once. I just wanted a night out. And I think I heard dark folk rock, which I had no idea was...
Sorry, I don't know if that's an official genre. That's
No, you know what it was? They were playing folk instruments, but there was a darkness to it.
Sure.
It didn't feel like they usually went together.
Sure.
Okay, and so were you the leader of the band?
I was the sort of the songwriter and the singer.
How do you become the leader? Because you both sing and write, everyone kind of circles around you.
I put the band together, and yeah, if you write the songs, then, you know. But it can work in various ways. Friends' bands would have a songwriter who wasn't necessarily quote-unquote their leader.
Okay.
But in this particular situation among this group of people, that's...
Did you feel comfortable being the leader?
Yeah, I did, actually.
You did? Why?
I think initially, less so. There was a lot of feeling out, especially as quite a young person, about like how does this collaborative group going to work? That we can, you know, we need a very singular and polished outcome, but everyone wants to sort of get their ideas in there. And I think it was actually probably a gradual process of finding how I liked to lead the group, where I wanted others to take sort of leadership. Opportunities within in that particular sort of context. I think by the end of my sort of tenure in the band, which is a pretty long time, it's about 8 years, I think I felt pretty comfortable in that sense.
You were telling me about how much you learned about running companies by leading a band. What's an example of that?
Yeah, I mean, we were talking earlier about the band room, which I guess for those who haven't been in bands before, it's the place you're rehearsing in many ways, you're sort of working on the live format of your songs. And it can be a sort of intense place because it's, you know, you're in there for like 4 hours, right? And you've got some big input, you know, play to 2,000 people, it's, you know, some festival, so you sort of, there's a level of pressure. And you've got these hyper-talented people who are all sort of thinking in different ways. So, you know, the drummer's thinking in a very particular way, the violinist is thinking a particular way, the bass player's thinking
a
particular way.
You had a violinist in your band?
We had two violinists.
Wow, okay.
But they're all kind of coming with their own...
Their
own way of thinking about what you're doing, and they're all creatively contributing.
Mm-hmm. I can't lean back in this couch. It's a very deep couch. I need more pillows.
And you know, and you need to like, you need to moderate those ideas and make sure that the final product you're producing is coherent, it's cohesive, and ultimately it's for the benefit of the listener.
Okay.
And less so for the benefit of the musician.
And so if somebody comes up with an idea that you just feel is a dumbass idea, what do you do that you don't hurt their feelings?
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's the, you know, it's really interesting you say don't hurt their feelings because like, and in terms of being the leader of a company, it's like, you need people to be so bought into what you're doing, especially in a startup where it's like, hey, I want you to leave Microsoft and come join this fledgling startup and, you know, see where it'll go. People need to be so enthused about what they're doing and they need to have a sense that the thing that they are building is theirs, you know, in some, you know, material way. So in terms of like in the band room, what I learned about how to get creative people to have a sense of contribution without and still weed out bad ideas was just to go full tilt into the idea and give it full benefit of the doubt. So it's like, you know, you think we should turn this into a polka and play for 20 minutes the same loop, like let's give it a shot. And everyone, like let's work out the best version of that idea and let's try it. And then normally at the end of that, if it was a bad idea, we kind of look around and be like, yeah, that didn't really work.
And so you have to play it out knowing full well that it's probably gonna, almost definitely gonna be a bad idea to do polka. But you have to.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I've learned about leadership that, you know what, that I didn't think I at least consciously understood was there are many easy ways to lead that require less energy, which is like authoritarian responses to like, no, bad idea, moving on. But often I think things that require a lot of energy, like sitting someone down, explaining your whole philosophical framework as to why you came to a decision, they have so much more buy-in in what you're doing, and ultimately, they can become better decision makers and will become a more valuable member of what you're doing.
And so you'll have somebody on your team who's a designer design something that you believe is a bad idea just out of respect for them and to let them come to their own conclusion?
No, so I won't, this will never get to the point where it's like now in the product. It's more like they'll say, you know, Dylan, we should turn everything pink and flashing. Yeah. And I'll be like, okay. Well, first of all, you have a choice of being like, no, that's a bad idea, we're not going to do that, drop it. Or you can like, let's sit down, let's talk about it, and let's dig into the layers of why you think that's a good idea. And if after, you know, and you have an hour-long conversation with someone that often draws in much higher level thinking than whether it should be pink and flashing. But after having that discussion, they understand something more fundamental. I think that's the point. And once you have a series of those discussions, this person understands something deep about your business and about your market and about your product in a way that means they can start adding value in so much more regularly at a higher cadence and at a higher depth later on.
I see. So you let them talk it through, not create it necessarily.
Correct. So it's same as the band in many ways. It's like, I'm not going to let something get into the song or the product or the whatever that actually reaches the user, reaches the audience if it's not to my standard or to the company's standard of what greatness is. Yeah, our first principle as a company is undeniable bestness. It's like, that's how we want to win this race. It's by producing something just undeniably great.
You are the only person who walked into this place. We've got an Airbnb here in Sydney. Every guest who's walked in here has had this sense of intimidation about them for a bit, and then eventual ease, and often the ease happened through the interview, and at the end they felt comfortable. But you're the first person who just kind of walked in comfortable. Why?
I think, again, I don't know why I keep talking about the band, but I think the band puts you in lots of crazy situations, many interviews, you're in front of thousands of people all the time. There's just a level of comfort. It didn't come naturally to me, though. I will say that I actually, funny enough, when I got started in business, when I was 19, I did this product business when I was 19. It was an online rostering business. The first thing I had to work on was eye contact.
Really?
I remember saying to myself, I was sitting there in this meeting, and I was just looking at the table the whole time because I couldn't bring myself to look at someone's eyes. And so that was like the first thing I used to get right was like how to look at someone's face.
My technique was I heard to look at people's forehead, but they could tell when you're not looking them in the eye. So I look at one eye, which I find is easier than two eyes.
Okay.
And that allows me to have an easier conversation with some eye contact. What do you do?
No, I think I've sort of built up a nice thick skin. I'm just interested in folks and, you know, don't mind a bit of eye contact these days.
Is this you from your band-aids right here, what I've got on my iPad?
That is actually me during my Quiller days, but not long after my band-aids.
Long hair, cap, that's...
So what I was able to get by looking at some articles about you is that you started out as a designer.
And engineer.
And engineer. Doing what?
So I spent about pretty much in the same period as I was playing in the band. I was a consultant, sort of working, just one-man band consultant. And I did the full spectrum of online business. And basically, this is everything that I learned when I was 19 and I did this business. So it was marketing and sort of strategy around an online product. It was brand and identity design. It was UI design. It was UX, what used to be called information architecture. But
can you give me an example of a project that you worked on that combined some of these?
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the interesting ones that I'm not sure if it still exists or not, but so Saatchi & Saatchi were doing this actually really cool thing, sort of ahead of its time in many ways. But what they wanted to make was like a sort of Twitter feed that a brand could go and suck in things from all over the internet. So like
okay.
Twitter things and RSS things and podcasts and sort of assemble them around a particular content topic
okay.
and make it this kind of destination for that topic. But it was like really sort of beautiful the way it all, you know, was fluid.
So they came to you with that idea?
They were thinking of this kind of mini okay. product that they were going to farm out. And I worked with those guys maybe a year and a half, and there was like a ton of technical stuff of like, how are we going to build this thing? A ton of like interactivity questions of like, how's this going to work so it's natural? Especially for the brand, the administrator of the brand, because they, again, needed to be like totally non-technical. How are they going to pull all this stuff in? A lot of security questions, et cetera, et cetera.
So you're doing this, and then you sent out what type of proposals?
Yeah, so originally in my business, it was PDFs.
And you did a PDF?
Yeah,
you know. You personally, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So I was the only person in the business.
Yeah, I just don't see you working PDFs. It feels very much like Dunder Mifflin type technology.
Sure.
But you did it.
It's probably a short leap to why Quiller exists, but... yeah, so I had the most complicated process. It was like Excel to work out my actual pricing, Microsoft Word to work out what I wanted to say, and then a combination of InDesign and Illustrator to make it look some particular way. Now, the real pain in my rear was I'd put all this stuff together, I'd send it out, and then they'd be like, can we change this one thing? I'd be like, oh, okay, let me go back to Excel, redo the thing, copy and paste every cell into Illustrator, and then copy paste into InDesign. Rejiggle the thing, email it to them.
Okay.
And that was like the loop to get this thing done.
Because you had to have it look good? Because you could have just put in a Google Doc or
something. Yeah, well, here's the thing is like, for me, what I was selling was this combination of design and technical talent, right? Mm-hmm. And the other thing was I was a one-man band. This is actually an interesting thing. Like, this job with Saatchi or with, the government, was my last client as a consultant was the government. They need to trust you. And, I'm just some kid sitting in his house making. I'm not a some 100-person agency. So you need to send them something. And that's, a lot about what the philosophy of Quiller is like, you need to be really impressive when you're persuading. You're asking someone to be like, hey, you should trust me with your project. You should pay me. And you should choose me among all these options out there.
Proposals really do that. They give a sense of confidence to a proposal.
No, I agree, but it's also the interesting thing for me is, and I think with Quiller is like, it's the proposal, but it's also everything. As in, it's your first contact, it's like, here's the case study that I did for, this guy, and this is what I did for the value that I rendered for them.
How would you show all that?
What's that, sorry?
How did you show all that, your past work?
I had a bit of a system, so like, obviously you have your portfolio, but then you have a case study, of like, here's what I did for, this startup, and this is the product they wanted to work through, and you tell the story. There was a company called Tihan and Lax, I don't know if you remember them.
Mm-mm.
Anyway, they were a phenomenal design company, and I loved the way that they told their case studies. I wanted to do that. So you had these case studies of what you'd done, how you worked with the client. Obviously you had your proposal. Then you had your sort of project milestone reports of like, you know, we said we'd be here, this is where we're at, here's the results. Then you had, even your invoices looked great. And all of that meant, I think for me, was like the caliber of referral that came out of that was so different because they had this sense of like, this guy has a whole system, it's beautiful. Everything that comes out of their this business is like, you know, well thought out, well rendered.
So you started sending, you started converting it to web pages?
Yes.
On your own site?
No, so my little hack was, so if someone was, you know, like small fry, I'd send them a PDF.
Okay.
But if a logo came in, and the Starchy Job as an example was like, oh, I really care, I really want this job, then I would sit down in my underpants and code for like 5 days to build a standalone website that was the response to the brief.
With its own domain and everything?
Yeah. With a
really?
Or a subdomain of my site or something.
On your own personal site?
Yeah.
I couldn't go back in the archive and find it. You do have a bunch of good stuff on your site, but I couldn't.
That's been cleared out many times since.
Yeah, that's not like an easy thing to even find on Internet Archive. All right, and so one of the things that I read was that clients would say to you, this is beautiful, how'd you do it?
Correct. So they'd always be like, wow, this is amazing. Like, you know, is this a thing? Is this a tool? And for me, I think, you know, I'd done this business as a teenager. I'd done it by myself. And it was like cool in that I got some money. I built the thing. I got customers. But it was also really hard.
To create that website?
This tool I'd built when I was young. I mean, doing a product business was really hard. And I was pretty successful in many ways as a consultant. And especially for my age, I was like, life is great. I'm playing in this band. I'm earning a lot of money. Do I really want to go and do that thing that was really hard?
I'm sorry to interrupt. What was the product that you created then?
It was a thing which hurts my feelings because it has consequently become very successful businesses. It was called Smart Roster, and it was a way to do online shift rostering for casual shift workers.
Oh, yes.
But it was before, I launched it before the smartphone happened.
All right, I didn't realize what the roster thing was because I've interviewed a few companies that have done that, and I've tried to get it. There's a Sydney company that does it really
yes.
well too, right?
Deputy.
Deputy, right, deputy.com.
They're crushing it.
And all they do is they help you like schedule your people, the whole yes. thing. Yeah, I tried to get them on and it was just not working for this week, unfortunately.
Right.
But the founder was a really cool guy. I get it. So this was your thing, you launched it, why didn't it work out?
So I got some money for it, I built the product, I got some early customers. The management loved it, because the management, I made this button where you could auto-fill your roster with all the complicated roles and who was available and blah, blah, blah.
Meaning like, who's gonna wait tables tonight, who's going to be at the front of the house?
And there's all these certifications you need to do things, and found alcohol and the number of hours they're allowed to work, and they could click a button, it would auto-fill it.
Okay.
So they were like, this is amazing. Every member of staff was like, because this was a time when the internet lived on desktops and it often lived at universities and someone's house but not the other person's house.
What year was this?
I mean, this is coming on, this would have been early 2000s, I'd say, or late like maybe 2007.
How old are you?
32.
Wow, okay. And so you did it that early. That you must have been super young at the time.
I was 19.
19 when you did this. And I do remember a time when people would have like, I always assumed everyone had a laptop, but I remember being at someone's house and the roommates were sharing a laptop.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird for me. And they weren't even using like different accounts, you know?
And it was also different. Wi-Fi wasn't really a thing. It was like you plugged into your phone guy.
Got it. And so the people who worked hated it because they'd have to go and ask a friend to go.
They hated it. They were like, how am I supposed to give my availability? Like,
I have to sit down at this computer and formally
do it.
The
internet was a geographic place that was in a place.
In a room in their house, at a desk in their house.
Or their mum's, often their parents' computer. And so they were like, how can I update my thing?
And when it failed, I was gonna ask you how you felt when it failed, but let me take a moment here to talk about my first sponsor. First sponsor is actually a company that kind of fits in nicely here.
Okay.
A company called HostGator for hosting websites. I keep talking about it as a way of building up a website for your business. But you know what would be interesting? If you wanted to get a client, beyond proposals, if you just create a website about all the reasons why the client should work with you, or create a website about why someone should hire you for a job, full-time job, a site for them, it costs hardly anything. What does it cost to get a domain? 10 bucks, probably even cheaper than that. And then you install WordPress, you find a theme that you like, and you make it a theme about how you should work at Mixergy, or Andrew should hire you, or whatever, right? For hardly anything, a few bucks a month at HostGator. And frankly, if you don't like it, if you don't get the job, you want to cancel, they have 45-day money-back guarantee. I'm glad you're smiling at that and you're not saying, wait, they should be using Quiller for that.
Well, I think that there are reasons why, but I don't want to step on you.
Do you think Quiller would work for that too?
What I want to say is installing WordPress, you know, back to like the assumption of people who live on the internet all day that everything's easy. Like WordPress is incredibly intimidating for anyone who's not a developer.
I'll tell you what, if you're looking to get a job with me, you better know how to do WordPress. if all you're doing is showing me that you could use it, that's clever enough. If you're out there and you want to get a website, go to hostgator.com/mixergy. When you do, you're going to get the lowest price that they have available. 45-day money-back guarantee, unmetered bandwidth, unmetered disk space, all that stuff, really. You don't need to think about it. They have it working for you. It's hostgator.com/mixergy. All right, I'm okay with you talking about why your product would be better for that. Why do you think? So if someone wanted to get a job and it wasn't like a WordPress thing where they didn't want to show off that they knew how to set up a website, could they use Quiller for that?
Yeah, we actually, when we had a free plan, we had this thing called the Resume Builder, which I think was actually number one on Product Hunt or number two. It was okay. Very popular. And you just filled out a little form and it spat out this web page.
Uh-huh.
And we still get people who sign up to pay just so that they can
use a resume template?
Yeah.
Really? And why'd you get rid of the resume then?
For the free plan?
Why'd you get rid of the free plan?
I mean, business dynamics. We actually would love to get back to the free plan in time, but it's just not now.
Because there are people who are willing to pay, and if you give them a free plan, they're not going to pay, and they're going to be on the free plan forever.
There are different dynamics to a freemium business. And right now we're sort of...
What are the different dynamics? This is an opportunity for me to learn.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's, you know, you need to be very, like, you need to be able to divide what is valuable, or what is valuable to a business and valuable to a team, which I think is, you know, I think something we're still trying to work out our position on.
Meaning what's valuable to you and your business versus a team of people who are using your software?
Yeah, there's a question of, like, you know, a consultant who earns $1 million a year might just be a one-user account, and what, you know, but he should be paying, obviously. Yeah. Then you've got the resume searcher, he's also one user. So like, okay, so is it users that you separate the free on, or, you know, what features of this?
Yeah.
So it's a ballet between like your market segments and your feature set. I think we're still, it's like a very active discussion in the company, but not one that we've sort of settled on yet.
The reason that I like the resume builder part is if you help somebody get a job, they know your software well enough that they could recommend it, right?
Yeah.
Like, how'd you even do that? Here you are. This is you on Product Hunt. Whoa, 1,000 upvotes.
There you go.
Wow, that's phenomenal. Okay, so what did you take away from that business that didn't work out?
So much. One of my core lessons was do not do a business by yourself. I've got a wonderful business partner and co-founder in Quiller called Mark Tanner. He's an ex-Googler. He's not technically, he was a sales guy. And that was something it was bloody lonely doing that whole thing by myself. And there's a lot of times where you just need someone to be like, what do you think, what should we be doing here?
Really, to just talk it through with someone. And you felt like there was no one for you to talk to.
There's always people to talk to, and anyone out there who's building a business by themselves, power to you. I think there's a difference is someone who has as much at stake in the business as you do. Because you might be like, should we hire this person? I don't know if it's a good idea. You can talk to a friendly person, and you know, an entrepreneur who's, you know, they don't care about it the way you care about it. So it's nice to have a co-founder.
Did Mark care about it as much as you did? I mean, he could always go back and sell something else.
Look, I think initially, since I built the first version of the product and it was, you know, my sort of baby at that time, there was definitely like a new father exposure to the new baby. But after a period of time, you're both a parent.
And the two of you know each other because you used to be friends as teenagers.
Yeah, we've known each other for a really long
time. Music together. All right, so you saw that people like this product. At what point did you finally say to yourself, all right, I'll get back in the product space?
Yeah, it actually took me quite a long time. Because as I said, I knew that building products was great and I loved it, but I was already doing it in many ways as a consultant. And I was quite resistant to starting this business because I was like, life was in a great balance of playing this band, earning a lot of money, and doing the thing that I loved. I was like, why should I give that up? But I think there was just enough signal coming back from very serious businesses as well of quite significant scope. And I just sat down to think about it strategically. I was like, well, this could apply to like almost anyone in business, consumers as well, if we have if and when we get back to having a free plan. Like this, and if I thought about it on a grander scale, it's like, this could totally disrupt what a document even is in the 21st century. Like, that's a serious business.
When you say disrupt what a document is, what do you mean? Were you thinking of taking it?
Sure. Well, look, I think the old, there is this lineage, there's a lineage of design thinking in documents that exists in the incumbent tool set. So like, if you go and look at Google Docs, as amazing as Google Docs is, like collaborative editing, incredible, or at least at the time, incredible. But it's like an A4 frame sitting in a browser. Like, that's how they're thinking about what a document is, which is,
A4 meaning the size of a paper.
Sorry, yeah, US letter paper for our...
I know, I'm with you. I was just trying to think of, like, what's a tech version of what tech is he talking about? But I get it.
So it's just like saying, a little fine...
Why
little,
does it have to be that?
Because I think the thing about it is the design thinking that underpins much of the document tools we have today is, like, it's analogizing a finite physical thing, which is a piece of paper.
Yeah.
But the world has kind of dropped almost all of those skeuomorphic ideas to be like, no, we're living in this now ubiquitous world of the web. A document being a way of expressing an idea shouldn't be this like legacy black and white static thing. You should be able to use, because what always strikes me is like people sit on the train and they're doing their banking on their amazing app. Then they look at the news on some interactive widget. Then they message their friends. And then someone asks them, then someone says, pay me $150,000. And they show them this black and white flyer.
Right.
Like, that doesn't make sense. When you're at that critical moment of business where you're trying to persuade someone to do business with you, to care about your propositions, you should be at sort of maximum communication potential. You should be using all that web stuff.
Right. When I'm thinking about, if somebody comes to my site to buy from me, I'm not creating a set of PDFs for them to buy. I'm creating something that flows, that is long, that has images. That one of the things that we added was like a slider to one of our sales pages. That helps because people just fidget with the slider.
And it's in the language that everyone's, it's this like level of communication that everyone's used to everywhere else. It's just business, it's like lagging in this other decade.
But beyond proposals, what were you thinking?
It's kind of everything. It's just like job ads, case studies, marketing materials. Like, you know, hey, we've got this, let me tell you about the new features we've just launched at our thing. It's like, it's really how you communicate with the outside world.
Right, that makes a lot of sense. Why should a press release even just be a document? Well, it could be that because you need it to help people write, but why couldn't it also be on the same page, all of the logos and other information?
And media, as in the other interesting thing, especially about press release, is like so many companies are now built on videos and audio and interactive charts that show you the growth in the so-and-so, the 3D model of how the blah, blah, blah works.
So you genuinely thought this is the future, this is how big it could be. It wasn't like, I need to raise money. I need to come up with some BS about how big this is going to be. It's going to change everything.
Our first tagline, which was inadvisable as a marketing tagline, was documents for the web. It was like a rethinking of what a document can be in this modern era. Now, that was a really inadvisable, that was the wrong marketing message to go out with originally because users needed a more focused message.
Yeah.
But that was like, from the beginning, we've thought about like the document can express so much more than they currently do, or at least the incumbent.
Okay, so you built the first version yourself?
Yeah.
And then when did you say, I'm gonna go find a business partner and here's the guy I'm gonna go get?
I kind of should remember the year. I'm gonna say 2014 would have been the year.
And you launched 2012?
No, we launched in 2014.
Oh, okay.
I think I maybe started, maybe I was thinking about the idea in 2012.
Okay.
I probably built it in late 2013 and it would have launched, I assume 2014.
I see 2014 on archives when you had it. Why'd you come up with the name Quiller?
So the idea of Quiller is that once upon a time, you know, we're talking about documents and their lineage. Once upon a time, monks would copy a book in these like illuminated scrolls.
Uh-huh.
And they'd be like, 9 months later, they would emerge from their little crook and say, I've copied the book. We now have two copies of the book, right?
Okay.
And then the Gutenberg press came along and was like, that is, you know, let me show you what efficiency looks like.
Okay.
And now they could just pull the crank and they had a copy of the book, right? So the Gutenberg printing press put the quill right out of business. And what we want, and in many ways, I think the Google Doc of today has a strong anchor in the Gutenberg printing press. And we want to make another sort of paradigm leap from the Gutenberg printing press to this web of, you know, this document of the future that's predicated on the web.
Okay, so how'd you find your co-founder?
So, as I said, he was a sort of a friend of mine all the way through.
Why him? Why did you decide to go
with him?
I've poorly phrased that. You know why? Because I'm also, like, I have screenshots of your Internet Archive stuff, but I'm going back and I want to see what that very first version from June 2nd, 2014 looked like.
It's pretty basic.
I actually thought that the website throughout, as I looked at it in the Internet Archive, was basic and clear and had a clear explanation of the features from the start. It wasn't like you started out with one thing and ended up with another.
Oh, correct. I mean, that's something that's, I think, has been good about the business. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's like we've always been very clear on the value of what we're doing and what it is we're building.
And also here, this is one of the first versions, sell more, right? It's always been, and I kind of like this about your business, even though you had this big vision for how you're going to change documents, you also were very clear. We're going after people who are selling. This is going to help you sell more.
Well, the sell was where we needed to focus, but it was always about external. It was always about, like, there are great tools for you and your team, and it doesn't really matter. All you care about is what you're saying,
right,
or if you're organized. Whereas what was so lacking was the conversation between the business and the customer. Okay. That part had just not been reinvented. So, like, a sell is part of that, but that's also, like, attract, upsell, and, you know, talent. I don't know the word for talent is, but, like, attract talent, if you want, as opposed to customers.
Okay, so why him?
Yeah, sure. So, as I said, when I was 19, I did this business and just did everything. I was, like, Mr. Sales, Mr. Product, Mr. Design, Mr. Engineer, Mr. Janitor.
Okay.
And the part that I loved and I felt I was good at was strategy, sort of business strategy and product. And the part that I, you know, as I said, when I was first getting started, eye contact was a thing. I was like, sales is not really what I, you know, love doing and I'm amazing at. And I really wanted someone who was super strong at sales, especially because, you know, we certainly have strong ambitions towards the mid-market and the enterprise of what we're doing. And I was like, well, I need someone who's got experience in really large corporations, you know, who can sit in a boardroom and sell to all hell. And Mark's just a phenomenal salesman.
Okay, so the two of you partnered up, equal ownership?
What's prefer not to say.
Okay, so. I think I've got a little bit of the answer for it. And then you built the first version.
Well, yeah, built the first releasable version, yeah.
You did. By
correct,
yourself.
Correct.
No outside developers.
No, so we got our first developer maybe a year after I'm actually not sure on the timelines, but I want to say there's this excellent engineer from Microsoft called Ben, still with us today. He's just an awesome asset to us. But the platform sort of existed. So that's not true, because he was with us when we launched our beta. So I think the majority of it was there, but certainly we brought Ben on before we launched our beta.
And the first version allowed me to create my own proposal, basically, right?
With these sliders, look at this, I highlighted the sliders using my iPad, that would let me quickly price things out for you. Mm-hmm. And that was it. Easy page, look nice, gave me a URL that I can give to somebody without the Quiller domain or with it?
With it at that point.
With it, and then that's it.
That was it.
That's it, okay, and then how'd you get your first customers?
I mean, I'm actually trying to, someone asked me this the other day of, like, how do you get started?
Yeah.
I think we must have just rung people that we know. I'm pretty sure that we just rang people who we knew.
And you said, do you want to use this?
Yeah, I think I seem to recall emailing a bunch of agencies and, like, always, you know, you knew a friend that worked at an agency, can I speak to your boss?
You would say that?
Yeah, just like.
And you felt comfortable doing that yourself too?
Yeah, well, so when I was, like, I'd been in business for a long time. I didn't love sales, but I didn't have a problem doing it.
Okay.
Just email people and be like, email a friend, be like, you work in this industry or you are tangentially related to it.
Would you use this? Would you introduce me?
Yeah.
That type of thing.
And that was good. That was like great exposure to people being like, no, for these reasons. And
what were some of the reasons?
I can't even recall.
Was there
now.
Anything that stood out for you as like, why do we miss this? Of course, if we only had that, we'd be doing great.
I don't think it was, well, actually, I think something that in retrospect was an interesting signal and something that, you know, we were talking earlier about, like, what were the biggest, like, what did we miss in the business? And something that I think I missed was just how significant a product we'd need to create in terms of breadth in order for it to be really compelling.
Because I mean, that alone, what I just talked about, was not enough for most people?
No, so it is if you're at a small scale of business, mm-hmm. but for the kind of companies that I wanted to land to feel good that, like, you know, we were onto something here, What they needed was like, well, I need to talk to my CRM, and I need security, and I need analytics on it. So they needed all these auxiliary pieces.
Analytics, because they got, with many other document platforms, they got to know how many people opened it up.
No. So interestingly, at the time, that was still very protein or didn't exist, but they were used to analytics in the rest of their software suite.
So they wanted it in this too.
Yeah, they were like,
if you're creating a web page, then give me web page features.
Why, exactly.
Huh, okay. And then they also wanted the CRM. Why the CRM? They're creating a proposal. PDFs don't have CRM integration.
But it's as in, you have to manually stitch it together. You need to like, oh, drag your PDF onto your CRM so it's connected, but don't, you know, and you could forget to do so. And
Right. Because when they send the proposal, they need it in their address.
All of that has to be tracked. All those relations.
Know that they did it right. Yeah. I wouldn't have thought of that either, because you're running a company by yourself. You're not adding it to a contact. You just know I sent it out the bot. Yeah, that's it.
Exactly.
Okay. And you couldn't get sales until you had that.
Well, I mean, that's not true. We could, but no, I wanted to get it with these, you know, some of these more serious businesses that made me feel that like we're building something valuable here.
Do any of these people ring a bell? Photos of your early customers? Do you remember how you got them or what they needed?
So friend, guy's still with us who's a phenomenal customer, friend.
That's it. So it was mostly your friends who were using the software at these different companies?
Initially, like right at the beginning, yeah.
Yeah. All right, let me talk about my second sponsor and then come back in and find out how you got, what features were starting to get customers, what was working for you. Second sponsor is a company called TopTal. Have you ever heard of them? I'm going to blow your freaking mind. Do you guys have a phone editor?
A phone editor?
Yeah. This is the key. Like, can I create a document using my phone?
Mobile. No, not
no,
yet.
No, mobile. Okay. All right, great. This is actually the example I've been using with a lot of guests. Imagine if you said, you know what? I think we need a mobile editor. I think that if people could create it on their phones, then they would feel more connected to this and they would see how beautiful it looked on phones. Our team is too busy. You could go to TopTal and you could say, TopTal, I need somebody who's already created an editor, already created something that show that customers see, maybe even if it's like landing page editor, right? On a phone. Give me those people and then I want to interview them. They would get you the best of the best people who've already done this. You could interview them. If you like them, you could either get started often with a team of people who work well together or an individual who's done this and just get started, have them do it like a Skunkworks project. If you love it, you can bring it into your company and then let other people on your team take over. If you like the person who you're working with, that person could become like a full-timer with you. And if you don't, nothing ventured, nothing lost. Like the founder of Grasshopper says, he uses TopTal. He's a guy who sold his business for $170 million. They did phone service for small and medium-sized businesses. He said, a lot of times they'd hire people from TopTal. They'd develop something on the side. They didn't like it. And they said, we're so glad we didn't actually have our team develop this and get distracted. That's the beauty of TopTal. They have the best of the best developers, funding by Andreessen Horowitz, so you know they're a good company. If you want to work with them, don't go to TopTal.com. And I should say, top is on top of your head, towels and talent. Don't go to TopTal.com. Go to TopTal.com/Mixergy. They're going to give you 80 hours of TopTal developer credit and a no-risk trial period. And if you don't love them, you don't pay, but don't worry. They're still going to pay the developers because they're good people. Longtime Mixergy fans, they created that URL for me. If you're out there listening, go to toptal.com/Mixergy. I don't even know why I'm looking at the camera. We don't even, this is a podcast. I've got cameras anyway, though. What was starting to work for you for getting customers? What's the first bit of marketing? Was it calls? Was it something else?
I mean, one of the really interesting aspects of our business is that when you use Quilla, people, it's often sort of at a level, a bar of impressiveness that someone will say, wow, that's really cool. You sent me a website. How did you do that? And they'll say, oh, it's actually this tool called Quilla. So there is an inbuilt virality into what we do.
Because you're sending it. But you're sending it to one person at a time, right?
Well, no. As I said, there's a lot of marketing use case. There's recruiting use cases. There's, you know, customer success use cases. So it actually, you know, although I think, you know, proposals and sales is, you know, a really strong use case for us. So all these other use cases around the go-to-market org and, you know, and again in recruitment. But it reaches a lot of eyeballs.
So if I were to see, where do I see one that's free? Or an actual template. If I were to look at a template, would I see your branding on the bottom?
Depends what.
What level? And yeah. Does that help for getting customers, branding on the bottom?
It helps for a sort of general awareness. It helps for general awareness.
But it's also not the type of thing that if I get it, I'm likely to use it. The people who receive proposals aren't usually the people who write proposals, right?
But I think they're aware of this tool. I think they're like what people understand when they see a Quilla page and why a viral user is a phenomenal user is that they get the disparity between like, oh shit,
we usually see PDFs, now we see something.
Well, we're operating in 1998. These guys are operating in 2020. Hey guys, we should look at this tool.
By the way, PipeDrive is really coming up in the world.
PipeDrive is coming up in the world.
I'm seeing them as being boasted on integration pages more and more. Do you use PipeDrive?
Internally?
Yeah.
No, we're a HubSpot company.
Yeah, and they've copied PipeDrive. They have their own like pipeline thing. And I'm not putting them down. It sucks for PipeDrive, but it's the way of the world, right? Which is kind of interesting. But yeah, we use PipeDrive. I'm sure you were in our PipeDrive system.
I think we used PipeDrive at one point in time, but for some reason we went over to HubSpot.
Well, if you use HubSpot, then they've got their own version of it and it's kind of integrated. Do you feel bad because you just said, I'm not using someone that's a major partner? A little bit. I saw your cheek twitch. What else was working for you for getting more users?
I mean, the templates, I think, were really helpful.
You're showing people how it could be used.
Showing people how to use, and it also made it so fast. Like, if you go to our templates right now and you go, you know, sign up through one of our template pages, you've got something that's like, I'm not going to say, I reckon you're probably 90% ready to send in terms of, here's a structure, it's designed to look great.
Let me do it right now. So, we do, obviously, sponsorship ads here. We don't send proposals. Actually, I don't know. Do we? Maybe we do. I take it back. I have no idea. But it's kind of interesting. You guys have a sponsorship. This is event sponsorship proposal, but I wouldn't be surprised if you also had one for ads. So there's a spot here with a video. So you're telling me I could show people what my event looks like. And then there's fill in the gaps for like my audience engagement, how many people saw it, and so on. And then there's a big button for accept. And people actually will hit the button when they're ready to accept.
Yeah.
And then they could even pay using Stripe.
And find there's different packs. So one of the things you can do, you know, because I think for your particular use case, it's often packages. It's like, do you want to be a brass sponsor? Do you want to be a gold? Right. Do you want to be a platinum?
And you guys do that right away.
Yeah, so there are different packages you can have in the quote. They can configure it in different ways. Like, how many spots do you want in the podcast? Do you want to have 10 spots or 3 spots? And that'll update the price dynamically. And then they can accept an e-sign for it. They can pay you, again, all through the page.
So I have to say, I found with proposals that sending it out is a nice thing because it gives people something to think about, but you want to get them on the phone after they see it, right? And close the sale yourself.
One of the really interesting things, though, on that note is like you get notified as soon as it's opened. So you'll know.
So you can call them right away.
Yeah, well, it depends how creepy you want to be, but you can be like, yeah, like one is, it's so interesting using internally like dog food in Quilla because, you know, job ads, investment, our own customer success materials, like everything. It's like we know when it's been opened, what's been read.
Do you do that? Do you actually call people up when they open up?
Sometimes. We definitely use it as business intelligence.
To know that they have done it.
You know when they've opened it, you know what they've read, you know how many times it's been opened, you know where it's been opened from. And if you've got it, there's a feature we have where you can sign on through Google or LinkedIn, you know specifically who it is.
Oh, because they might need to open it up with LinkedIn.
As in, to look at the document, there's a security feature where you need to sign in through Google. So I'm like, I know that John opened it up.
Got it.
So it's actually...
For templates, I can understand that more people would sign up because of the templates, because it's hard to create your own thing from scratch. It's hard to even visualize it until you see it. What about for bringing people into the site?
As in like...
How do you get people to come to the site? What started working for you for that?
I mean, interestingly, the templates. As in, a lot of the keyword search volume is
people
around...
People are looking for proposal templates.
I mean, not even proposal. We've got a pretty broad selection of, you know, selection of templates. So we just kind of looked at what are people looking for in the document space they're trying to get a head start on. Let's make a template for that and then introduce them to Quilla.
You know what your competitors do? They do something like let's say proposal template. People are searching for it. They say, here's a great proposal template. Here's what makes it good. Enter your email address to get it. And then when people get that template, they say, by the way, there's a better way to do templates than what you just asked for.
Sure.
Right? But that's not your way.
No.
You have people come in, they see that there's a template, they could then use the template, they hit the button to use it, and then they become customers.
Correct.
And that's what works for you.
Yeah.
Let me take a look at SimilarWeb. I always use SimilarWeb to get a sense of what people are doing. It's telling me that you guys are big in the United States, much bigger even than you are in Australia.
That is true.
Search is really powerful for you. Very. 87% of your traffic comes from search, which is huge. And it's things like technical writing people are doing, how to write a white paper. Do you guys have a template for a white paper?
Stretching my knowledge, probably. I hope so.
That's a pretty significant thing for you guys. Wow. A significant traffic driver. Facebook is sending traffic to you somehow. Why? What do you guys do on Facebook?
We do social ads, but as in, again, it's all orientated around like, you know, there is a better way to run your business and you should check out this tool. It can, you know, change how you're perceived in the market.
There's one company that was sending you traffic. I never heard of them. I want to ask you about them. Oh, here it is. I had the tab open from before to make sure to ask you. InstructionalSolutions.com. What is that?
I have not heard of InstructionalSolutions.com.
They send a bunch of traffic to you. What they do is they change the way your team writes business writing courses that work. So I guess people are sending their company
I actually may think I remember. Sorry, if it's what I recall.
Yeah.
You know, Quiller is a really useful business tool that businesses ought, you know, I know this is a bit of founder Kool-Aid, but I do believe it's a really useful business tool that businesses ought to know about that'll help them improve, you know, the kind of clients they can land and how many of them they can land. And
so courses, companies will send their people to this course. The course will say, hey, here's a way to not just write better, but to make it look better.
Do you want to be operationally better? Like, you should check out, here are a suite of tools that you'll probably find of interest. Quiller is one of them.
So that's what I was thinking. What I was wondering is, though, do you have partnerships? Is this part of your strategy?
Not at the moment. Not formally.
So what is the top thing for you for bringing in new customers?
I mean, right now, it's a combination of virality and this, you know, search, the fact that there is demand today of people who are trying to find better ways to communicate with their customers.
And then when people, you know what I just realized? No, I was, the Google search term, that was actually what people are finding instructional solutions on. I've got a different tab open here. This is you guys. Direct, actually, there. That makes a little more sense. Direct is a pretty big source of traffic for you. It's not just search.
Which I think is I wasn't quite sure about those percentages. Which I think is a good indicator of our, you know, basically our word of mouth. Like, that's people telling other people, like, hey, you got to check out this tool. It's kind of great.
But there's still a bunch of search. Like, here are terms that actually make more sense. Business proposals for social media marketing. That sends traffic to you. Right now, things are starting to make a little more sense. Price sheet, software, outsourcing template. Makes sense. What about, do you have any, are you guys making calls to customers? Is there an outbound?
We're only inbound.
That's it. So they contact you, they come to a webinar maybe, they call you up, but there's no, they register, so we're going to call them up.
It depends on the customer. There are certain customers, you know, if IBM signs up, we'll go and have a chat.
Okay. Because you're doing what to find it?
Sorry.
How do you know that IBM signed up and that you should contact them?
Oh, you know, we haven't got BDRs, and we'll look at the emails, look at the user signing up.
Business development reps.
Correct.
They're looking at all the email addresses manually or using, what is it, Clearbit?
Clearbit will tell us.
We'll tell you. So you know, any email address, it'll check out who's using it, who's behind it, and if there's someone who's at a company that you guys are targeting, it'll tell your business development reps. Your business development reps will say, thanks for signing up. What's actually the process? What do they say?
Yes, well, they'll actually pass it on to an account executive. So they're like, hey, you know, SpaceX signed up.
That's it. And so you just contact them.
Exactly. And be like, hey, thanks for signing up. Like, how can we help you be successful here? Like, what are you trying to do? How can we help you?
That's it. It's how can we help you?
How can we help
you? Like the VC thing.
We have this term inside, which is like, we want them to have a good time in the playground.
But you don't call them up and say, we'd like to show you around to make sure that you understand this. It's just, how can we help
you? In terms of
what is the process?
What are you trying to achieve? What's going on? Call you up. What are you trying to achieve? What pain point are you looking to solve in your business?
Does the BDR try to get a call set up? Something like, thanks for signing up for our software. We want to make sure you use it. Steve can get on a call with you too.
Correct. Well, depends on the customer. But either they'll set up the call or they'll just pass on the contact.
Got it. Who's developing all that? That's your partner.
How do you mean?
Like, who's coming up with this whole sales process?
So Mark heads the sort of customer-facing part of the business. But we've also got these really smart guys in biz dev who sort of help a lot with our sort of sales ops stuff. And they're sort of designing a lot of that clear bit, sort of MQL, like marketing qualified lead, who qualifies, why.
Yeah, yeah. I'm hearing clear bit being used more and more, but it's like a behind-the-scenes tool.
It's pretty great. I would endorse it as a useful tool. Now, it doesn't have data on every business, but it's a really useful enrichment.
I'm hearing nothing but successes here. Any challenges?
No, so many. No. Come on.
Like what? It feels like this was easy.
Definitely wasn't easy. I'll say in the first 2 years, it was a case of, you know, I convinced someone to leave Google and come and join me. I convinced someone to leave Microsoft and come and join me. And we were not making money. We were making an absolute pittance. We were trying to build this enormous product. One of the core things is building an editor. And for any engineers out there, like, building editors is a non-trivial activity.
Okay.
It's actually incredibly difficult. So we were taking on this enormous technical challenge, an enormous design challenge, and we weren't earning any real money. There was definitely like some real hard yards of But the thing for me, at least personally, was, and I have always been totally confident and sure that this is valuable and that this is a better way of doing business.
Okay.
But, you know, there's a lot of times
you somebody to do that, to understand it.
But there's a lot of times you're sitting there waking up at 3 a.m. in the morning being like, I'm sure of this thing, yet why aren't we finding enormous traction and blowing up like Facebook is?
Why didn't you?
Find enormous traction.
Yeah, why? What was the answer in retrospect?
So part of that, I think, is, yeah, is our first tagline, which I mentioned earlier, documents for the web. That's like a philosophical, paradigm shift demanding yes. tagline. And we were thinking that way and talking that way, which was the wrong way to do it. Because the zeitgeist was still, it wasn't far away from, I'm now comfortable putting my credit card on the internet. Like that was in living memory, was like when people would refuse to do that. Now times have changed a lot since then, and the internet has become the fabric of people's lives in business and, you know, and as a consumer. And so I think what we're doing is marrying up far more with where, you know, where business is going and where just everyday lives are. But, you know, 5 years ago when we started the company, it was like, wait, my document is going to be a website? What the hell did that, what would that even be? Like, what would that even mean?
Right.
It was just not comprehensible. Then there were still a lot of businesses who went on the cloud, for one thing. And they were like, how could I not have it on premises? Like, how would that even work?
Yeah.
And that's the kind of environment that we were operating in. So I think, yeah, there was a real, A, how we were approaching it in terms of like, we were coming with the paradigm shift as our marketing message, which was not, you know, that was a hard lesson that we needed to learn.
Something you say for investors, but for the customer, you give them something more concrete.
So tangible. We needed to like drill, and that's, you know, interesting you sort of mentioned proposals. Like, proposals is just the thing that we realize people could hang on to and be like, oh, proposals, I care about that.
Yeah.
But if you look at our tool, it's a general purpose document tool for impressive, compelling communication that integrates with your stuff. Like, it's not actually necessarily anything to do with proposals per se.
Yeah, it's almost like landing page software in some ways, right?
And people use it for all kinds of
purposes.
They
do use it for landing pages, and then they connect it to Stripe so they can collect payment, and then...
All that kind of stuff.
I wonder if we should be doing it for that.
And it's, you know, what's interesting is when we had our free plan, oh my God, we had like fan fiction, we had kids in school using it, like we had everyone using it for everything.
Right, but those people are not leveling it up.
Well, I mean, you know, the school kid in year 10 is not able to afford, you know, the entry price point.
No, I can understand then why you wouldn't go free. But you know what? So I just entered my email address. I got the free version right now. You immediately, you just like in the second here.
Yeah, yeah. You're in a 14-day free trial.
I thought I'd need to put my credit card information.
No. Let's not make it. Let's not add friction.
That's it. And so now you've got my email address. I can go in here. I can actually use this. I can send it out. And if I have like a thing that I'm going to use for 14 days or less, I've used it for free and that's it.
Correct.
Which is not really common. So let's see if, will it work on my iPad? I'm actually going to add something. Let's see if we can add a Lego block. I'm hitting the plus. Oh, I could add a quote right in the center. Okay, let's do a quote right in the center.
Got to say, I don't know that we're necessarily set up for iPad, but we'll see how this experiment goes.
If it doesn't work, I actually believe in this case, it would be Apple's problem. Apple should just force all Safari browsing experiences to just be desktop. Like, you should not even have to adjust for the fact that I'm on an iPad. Okay, so I'm blaming Apple. Look, so I'm going to put description here for some text. What are we selling here? We're going to sell whiskey. Whiskey night. So you can buy a whiskey night with me. How much do we charge for the whiskey night? We're going to charge $100, American, not Australian. What's the unit? We're going to sell one at a time. And they now get to, now that I've done this, they see a total. Oh, and they get to put in how many?
Yeah, well, you can make that optional and interactive. So when it's received, they can configure that.
And they could see for themselves, here's how much it would cost if I bought 10 whiskey nights.
Correct, so they can configure the quote. Well, you can allow certain parts to be configured as you wish, and then they can get that live update on the price.
Ah, look at this. So I can show line items. I can then apply a discount. Oh, let's let them have a discount. No, screw that. No discount on whiskey. Ah, that is kind of interesting. So now the thing is, I like how this works. There are times when I do want people to pick, trying to think of use cases, and that's a headache.
But I think you know, your one with ads is a great one. It's like, which package, which option
for
do
sponsors,
you want,
yes.
How many spots,
right?
Also, you mean more generally?
I feel like with sponsors, I want us to get on a call with them and sometimes push them to take more, sometimes push them to take less. And I guess what you're going to say is, then Andrew, put it in here, right? Let them pick, you decide for them.
Well, one of the interesting things I think about that is, in general, when people pick for themselves, they tend to pick the safer. They're like, I probably should get the extra insurance.
Right.
So I would wager that you will get more platinum packages.
Because Sachit can't do upsell on the phone. It would be.
I mean, he can, but it's, you know, but that's you're being sold to, as opposed to, well, the reach will probably be better. I'll take the gold package.
That's interesting. That now you've got an upsell on this, and for us, maybe an upsell would be access to like Facebook ads to our audience or something.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the other interesting thing I think is you can provide a whole list of upsells that might be a bit painful for you to go through on the phone, but if this person's there considering it,
so it's just Sachit closes the sale. The proposal is just a way for them to see it on paper, what he's got, instead of him sending it via email, he sends it this way, and let's add an upsell on there.
Correct.
And the upsell would be something that we're kind of...
That's easy for us to offer. All right, I like where that's going. I like that there's an easy way to create a website like this. I'm trying to think of other uses for it. Can I use it for events?
Sure.
Like for selling tickets to events?
It doesn't like integrate with Eventbrite, but we've certainly had a lot of events
people... No, replacing Eventbrite.
Actually, yeah, I mean, you could.
Could you do inventory with it?
So this is something that's been quite interesting almost since the beginning of the company is, will we ever do product inventory? Mm-hmm. All I can say is that it's an internal conversation, but it's definitely one that's come up a lot.
What's the best part of having done all this, of building this company?
The people.
Just hanging out with the people?
Not hanging out, to be clear. Something magical happens when you assemble the right group of very talented individuals that care about something as much as you do.
And they do now.
Yeah.
You've got that team of people who are smart, who cared about it as much as you do.
The team, I do. It's kind of like a wonderful thing. And I think that's what's the best thing is you've also produced something that I think, I don't want to say makes people's lives better because that's such a startup tech bro thing to say. But the thing I always think about software is, I remember being like a kid, like 16, and having to do some menial stuff at these jobs that I was like, this sucks. Mm-hmm. This is the most repetitive mechanical task that a monkey could do. And then some bit of software would come out and then I don't have to do that task anymore. It liberated me from that dog work.
Yeah.
And I believe, and I think it's true if you go and use Quilla, it liberates you from so much dog work, so much repetitive dog work involved with documents, and means that the outcome that you get is like something you can be really proud of versus something you're a little bit like, oh, I'm sort of sheepishly ashamed of this thing.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm like, that's pretty cool. If what's happened is I've assembled this like crack team of people whose talents I admire, who care about something as deeply as I do, and we've produced this product that improves people's lives at work in that it liberates them from dog work.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And I'd love to do that, you know, to our earlier conversation of being in the first 50 meters, I'd love to do that at grander and grander scales.
Who's your idea? Like what's, if we were to sit here 5 years from now or 10 years from now, looking back, who's the one type of customer that you feel especially proud to help?
Probably.
Use case that you feel especially
proud of. I mean, that's hard because I don't want to.
I want to come up with a use case that's like not intuitive, but it shows that you've changed documents because you've done this.
One of the interesting ones, I think, one of our big customers is a removalist company, Australia's largest removalist company.
This is the people who remove junk?
So when you move house.
Oh, God. When you move, yeah, you guys, know. We call them movers.
Okay.
How are we all watching the same Netflix, the same videos, the same stuff, and still we have these phrases that are completely different?
Hey, why aren't we all on the metric system?
No, that's right. That makes sense. We should be on the metric system. But you're talking about moving companies.
Yeah, so a moving company, and they had, you know, they were really struggling with their document system in terms of like, you know, in terms of it wasn't interactive. They couldn't find a way to make it smooth and fast for people to do this. And we turned the document from something that was a static flyer that required getting on the phone, which means that they needed to scale the number, you know, need to get more people in order to do more business, and turned it into something that was, you know, beautiful, interactive, and worked across devices. Like to me, as you know, in a small way, and this is like, you know, I think we're only at the very beginning of this journey.
Yeah.
That kind of changed what the document is. And I think the difference is it became, it's the same difference as what happened between Web 1.0 and Web 2.0. Web 1.0 was like, it was a presentation, it was static, it was a flyer, it was something you would leave behind and it wouldn't change as a result of anything that you know, you do.
Like tripod, you set up your own web page, you tell people about what you're doing, but that's it.
It's like Geocities. Remember, you'd like go and you'd see it and it would be like, okay, well, this is the information presented. It's like a printed book. Like the, you know, I think a book is a good analogy. You get a printed book, you take it home, it can't change. It's set in stone. And then the Web 2.0 jump was like, you'd bring home this book, but depending on how you read it, it would change and you could interact with it. Mm-hmm. And I think this is the same jump we're trying to make with documents, was like, a document shouldn't be this static thing that doesn't adapt and doesn't change. And what we're trying to create is this like living interface that is interactive and it is dynamic and it's functional, it does things. And that means that the receiver of the document can interact with you and your business in these automated and scalable ways.
Yeah.
That just makes both sides of the equation far more efficient.
I often forget how much software can change the way that I'm doing things. Like, for example, the booking software that we used to have you come here, and that saved me, just picking that up saved me so much time because I didn't have to go back and forth with people. I didn't have to worry, did I give you my contact information? I didn't have to worry, do I have your cell phone number?
Sure.
It was just like, it's revolutionary. What software does that for you?
Probably the one that I love is an app called Things.
Things? It's a checklist app.
It's a checklist app. And I know that's like not the most like revolutionary.
How do you use it?
So do you know Getting Things Done?
Yeah. You actually still use Getting Things Done?
Well, I mean, you know, my...
Your version of
my
it.
My bastardized version
okay.
of it. And that has just sort of changed my life in a lot of ways for the better.
How do you use it?
I mean, I just use it in terms of the discipline of like, I keep nothing on my mind.
Something worries you, you put in a checklist.
Yeah.
That's it. I do that too, and then I forget about the checklist.
Well, that's why you gotta be disciplined with the software.
So every day you make sure to check it?
Everything, I live my entire life through it. But the thing that's cool about it, you know, in terms of it changing my life, is like, it works with Siri. So when I'm in the car, I'm like, hey Siri, remind me to whatever, and then it's on my list. It's on my laptop, it's on my iPad, it's on my phone.
Okay, what other productivity hacks do you have that work for you?
In many ways, I'm almost embarrassed to have mentioned the GTD thing.
The what?
The getting things done things. I'm a little bit, no more productivity hacks.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you sit down journal a lot?
No.
You don't? I feel like you're very well thought out about what you're doing, where you're going, who you are.
I think a lot, I just don't journal a lot.
And it's all in your head?
No, I'm big on writing.
Uh-huh.
I write things down when I want to formulate them.
Okay.
But in terms of the thoughts, they are on my mind.
Okay. I remember Sam Altman. I've been thinking about him so much lately because he left Y Combinator, so he's been in the news a lot. But also the fact that he is so good about sitting down once a year and writing his goals.
Mm.
And I've just been amazed that, I guess it's one of those things like getting things done that I thought, well, people don't do that anymore. They don't sit down and annually like write their goals and look at them. But he does. And I'm sure other people do too.
And that's why I actually think this you know, the getting things done system, or that style of thinking, is essentially that, but even on a more regular cadence.
Yeah.
Because you are keeping track of all the things you intend to do and what matters, and you know, prioritizing them.
I like the Siri version of that because I do like just telling Siri to remind me. The thing that helps me is I say, Siri, remind me when I get to the office. Siri, remind me when I'm at home. Or I say, Siri, remind me at a specific time, and that helps a lot. I still then don't follow through. What I needed to do is like automatically go to the right person who's going to do it instead of me.
Sure.
All right. I have gotten better at delegating. I'm kind of now drawn into this freaking editor. All I want to do is just play with it. Now I'm forgetting to end the interview because I just want to see what else I could do with this editor. I've gone through your software before, but never like this. I think I was going at it more of an intellectual exercise to get a sense of preparation and not like dicking around, screwing around on it and seeing what I could do. All right, it's Quillr, K-W-I-L-R.
Q-W.
Q, oh, okay, right. I'm looking at it actually and literally saying K. Q-W, do you think that this is like a tough name? Does that have to spell it?
It is a bit of a difficult name, I'm gonna be honest.
You're missing the R, the E after the L, right? Believe me, I call my company Mixergy. Everyone calls it Mix Energy. people compliment me about how great Mix Energy is. All right, it's QWILR.com. It's really beautiful. If you enter your email address, you can just go in and play around with it. And I want to thank the two sponsors who made this interview happen. The first is HostGator, which is now looking and saying, oh man, what do we do about these guys who are just not building websites because they're going over to Quillr? There's still a lot of uses for websites. I still believe that if you're trying to get a job and you're trying to show off your software skills, HostGator is a good way to do it. If you've got a company and you don't own your own website, which is now becoming more and more of a thing, you gotta have your own website. Go to HostGator.com/Mixergy. And finally, I wanna thank the company that helped me by helping me hire developers, designers, and the finance guy who's been helping me a lot. I went to toptal.com/Mixergy and hired from there. All right, thanks so much for doing this.
Cheers.